Welcome, everybody. I don't know if you noticed, it got a little nippy outside there last night. I thought it was a little cold walking over.
Chris, we can just barely hear you.
Okay, I will talk. I'll talk more in my mic then. Sorry. Is this better?
That's much better.
All right. Let's start with roll call.
Chris Beck.
Here.
Fay Gallant.
Here.
Brad Crick. Sherry Rolfe. Leslie Walls.
Here.
Jamie Warwick.
Here.
Jessica DeRochers.
I'm here.
Debbie Coxon. Jesse Atencio.
Here.
Lawrence Murakami. Janine Smith. Jan Smith, sorry. Jan Christensen.
Here.
Jane Grossclose.
Here.
Kim Eames.
Here.
Juan Gula.
Here.
Jeff Baxter.
Here.
Trish Winters, and I have as proxy Dino Jala.
I'm here.
Hi, Dean. Thanks.
Yeah.
And you have full voting rights in Trish's place.
Okay.
Jessica McCallum.
Here.
Susan Sanborn.
Here.
Jeanette Altman. Nate Bauer.
Here.
Richard Machida.
Here.
Yorko Toivonen, and I have as proxy Earl Voorhees.
Here.
And you have full voting rights in place of Yorko. Evelyn Pinsgaard. Lena Brown. Tom Langdon. Tony Abbey. And anybody whose name I did not call. Quorum was met.
Excellent. Thank you. Thanks, especially for those proxies that are here. Thank you very much for being here. Let's move on to the agenda for today. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
Sure. So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion?
We need to remove motion 214254-2, which is... item 2 under 9B. Or postpone it. Or
I'm sorry, which one, Nicole?
Item 2 under 9B, under new business.
Yeah, that's correct. That motion wasn't quite, the language and draft of that wasn't quite ready for move on the whole council. And so that's still on the agenda. So 11B2, it looks like. Okay, any other changes to the agenda? Okay. All those in favor of approving the agenda for today, say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, we got an agenda. Let's move on to minutes from last meeting. I have a motion to accept the minutes from meeting 253. Do you hear a second on that?
Second.
Any discussion? Okay. Hearing none. All those in favor in approving the minutes for Council Meeting 253, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we have minutes from last meeting. Cool. Moving right along, status of pending action. The leave share resolution that we shared with Staff Alliance and the other staff councils along the in the system, UAS has passed a resolution in support of the one that we created a couple months ago. UAA actually hasn't met yet. But our expectation is that they will approve that, I think, this month. Yeah, so hopefully by next month we'll have a resolution that we can then send on to statewide. Term employees, we'll have Brett Loblin talk a little more about that as a guest speaker today. I did not, hang on, I found out the 45-day limit wasn't, it is actually on the website. One of the questions last time was, hey, there's no, nowhere in the policy does it say that if you hire from the layoff list, can that it would only be a wait period of 45 days instead of 90. That is prominently displayed on the website. It's not in the policy because it actually, we shouldn't have a waiting period, period. You should just be, in good budgetary times, we would have, we wouldn't have a waiting period. So the policy doesn't reflect that, and I think that seems okay. The website where it talks about this policy does say that, though. So, and the memo from the chancellor to supervisors and managers did so as well. So for next month, I would like you to look over that draft policy. We can send that back out, Nicole, and see if you have any further questions on that. But I would like to see if we can have a resolution in support of that for next month's meeting. The bullying awareness training resolution, I believe we received a memo yesterday, right, Nicole? Okay, it's coming. It was signed by the chancellor yesterday, and so that is, I guess, pending. When we have that, we'll send that out to all of you. And the emergency leave policy is also currently being worked on, and that is on the agenda for the summit team next Tuesday. So I expect some information out of that at that time. Anything I forgot? Anything you want to add?
Nothing that's meant
to be heard. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Any questions on these items?
When does the summit team meet?
Next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday, thank you.
I guess we could say that the current plan before, can you hear me online? Okay. What we heard as far as the current plan for the emergency leave policy is an additional 2 days of sick leave that, and then the option to use sick leave as emergency leave when there are, weather issues or so forth, and that way it allows you to charge that whether or not you're on restricted funds, and offers that flexibility.
Yeah, and so that was the plan, kind of what the chancellor talked about last month at his report. It's just that writing that into policy is taking a little bit of time because it's difficult to word that correctly. So they are still working on that. But since that's on the agenda for the summit team, I suspect something will come out of that on Tuesday. Other questions? Okay. Let's move on to public comment then. Is there anybody for public comment in the room or online? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to officers' reports. I don't have that much this month. One of the things, I think you guys have seen the smoke-free ban survey that was sent out in the past week. We have some results for that, but I also think we'll talk about that under item 10. Of unfinished business, so I'll defer to that. One of the things the Chancellor mentioned to us during our pre-staff meeting was that one of the current considerations in the discussion around Common Calendar, UAF usually has a single day off. The last, like the Friday of spring break, is kind of a day off for staff and faculty. Some people are proposing to make that a chancellor day that can be used in that week or in other places. To kind of allow for us to move that day around so it could match up with a spring break regarding, you know, regardless of whether the common calendar puts the spring break on this week or that week. So it's not a set day in the calendar.
So that if our spring break at UAF did not align with our school district spring break, that day off would match the school district so that parents would have the same ability that they do now. And that vice versa, if the calendar did not align UAA's spring break with Anchorage's school district spring break, that chancellor could set his chancellor's day during the school district break. So it just allows that flexibility that was, I think we, from what we'd heard, was kind of the biggest concern for staff as far as common calendar went was the alignment with the school district calendar. So this gets around that option.
Can I ask a question about that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so presumably then there would be possibly times when the spring breaks of UAF and the Fairbanks School District would not be aligned?
Right. So the issue right now is that, and part of the reason UAF, UAA, and UAS all have different periods for their spring break is that they all align with the school district in their communities. And so moving to a common calendar, we would move to one spring break that lined up between all universities. But then, of course, some school districts would not line up with the universities. And so the thought would be perhaps, you know, 1 year it would line up with Fairbanks, the next year it would line up with Anchorage, and that the chancellor's day would allow us to have our staff holiday or employee holiday at the same day as our school district break.
And then there would be a Friday where there would be classes and staff would not be working?
Potentially. Well, maybe they wouldn't have classes that day. I'm not sure. It sounds like it's still fairly early in the discussion, and I'm not sure if Kari will talk more about it during the chancellor's remarks, but he mentioned it as just something that they were starting to look at as a potential option.
It was something that an idea that was proposed that he would like to see further investigation on, further exploration to see if that's a possibility.
Understood. Thanks.
So I would add to that, if you have thoughts or concerns on that, forward them up and we can take them to the next pre-staff.
Yeah, other than that, already talked about the bullying awareness training. Give you a quick update on the furlough task force. It met last week for the second time with some draft regulations. I was out of town, and so I did not attend that meeting, but Trish Winters did for us. She's also on that task force. And Trish is out of town this week, so I actually haven't had a chance to talk with her about that. What I know is there were draft regulations there, and Trish said they had a very good meeting, but didn't provide me a whole lot of details. So when I have those, I will forward those on to you. And then last, the Planning and Budget Committee is meeting again. After some consideration, I've decided I will continue being the staff council rep on that, as it takes it's really building on all the work they did last spring. And so since I was part of that then, and we're working with the same type of documents and the same, really building on the last semester's work, I decided, well, I'll continue on PBC as rep for staff council this fall. What are they, I mean, they'll be meeting in the spring again too, but, and whether, you know, at that point I'll probably be looking for somebody else to take over that. But for now, Planning and Budget is meeting. They had their first meeting last week as well, and it was really just to reorientate ourselves and have documents for review, and the next meeting is later this week. That's it for me.
Okay. Most of the things that we had come out of Staff Alliance in our last meeting that Chris and I attended last week, a week before maybe, it's all getting fuzzy, show up at some point else in the agenda. The big ones were that they're also all looking at smoke-free/tobacco-free campus potential resolutions coming out of their groups, but we're not doing it at a system level at this time. We're trying to do it at each university individually. They, on unfinished business, 10C, will have a chance to talk about the University of Alaska core values. And then, as Chris mentioned on the leave share resolution, we're just waiting on UAA, but we fully expect that they will pass a resolution in support, at which point system governance can make a formal resolution to the president recommending the change in the regulation that Jeff had so wonderfully put forward for us earlier this summer. So it's been a little slow getting all three universities on board, but we're definitely seeing progress on that and seeing alignment, and so far the response has been overwhelmingly positive.
Any questions for us at this point? Online? Okay. Moving on to staff achievements and highlights. Does anybody want to share achievement or a highlight? We've got some, but
maybe we should warm them up with what we've got. Okay. So we received two submitted, and thank you to Susan for submitting, and Clayton Bryce also submitted for us. So Susan submitted one for Fire Chief Doug Schrage, who received the 2014 Rotarian of the Year Award from the Rotary Club of Fairbanks, which is a huge honor, very prestigious, and in his in the write-up, there were some highlights that were pretty spectacular. Just his involvement across all the activities they do, the salsa dancing, blood donation, his commitment to Fairbanks and Alaska, and also his service choosing to go to China using his personal vacation time, going to rural China and working on a Rotary mission there. So a big honor for our fire chief, but well-deserved, I'm sure. Susan, did you want to say anything else?
He was quite humbled, but I was very proud to be there. It was his trip to China. So it was an interesting story when he spoke to the Rotary group, but Well deserved.
And thank you for sharing that. Our other was Ben Stacy, who was asked by the Association of Boards of Certification to travel to a review in Iowa. He was the only representative from Alaska and contributed his knowledge and experience of water treatment here at the UAF power plant, brought that to share with representatives from across the country, and then brought knowledge back to UAF as well. So a great representative for Alaska and for UAF at this conference.
Anyone else?
Well, keep thinking. We know they're out there. And we'll have this, you know, this five-minute blob in every staff council meeting from now on. So please keep your eyes and ears peeled and share them. We have a form that you can submit them on the staff council website. Or just bring them and share them in the meeting.
So thank you for those who submitted those. Kari? Kari Burrell will be here for the chancellor today, who is, I believe, on a plane right now. Yeah.
Is this mic on? It is. Okay. So I'm Kari Burrell, the executive officer, and I'm here to speak for Chancellor Rogers today. He is traveling. He is, as some of you know, the chair of the Board of Governors for the University of the Arctic, and they're having a meeting in Newfoundland. I think that's how they say that, and it takes a very long time to get there. So some things that I wanted to cover, and I apologize that I missed some of the earlier remarks. I'm not sure if you covered the smoking and tobacco potential ban, the conversations about that. The Board of Regents has heard testimony on that issue a couple of times with folks encouraging the board to take a position to ban smoking or even ban all tobacco products. The president has asked the three chancellors to think about the issue and bring him their recommendations this Friday. Chancellor Rogers will not be there in person to share his thoughts, but he does plan to provide some input to the president this Friday. And so we appreciate very much the staff council assisting in gathering input from campus, particularly from staff, and trying to be methodical about posing the question and breaking it down between the implications of a smoking ban, implications of an all tobacco product ban, and then whether there need to be any kind of exceptions or to that kind of policy. So we look forward to seeing the results of that. And I know that you guys are going to talk about it today, but if you can get that over to the office later, that would be great. Moving on, let's see. Obviously a big topic that's on a lot of people's mind is preparation for fiscal year 16 budget. I think I mentioned before, the chancellors had to submit their proposed budgets for fiscal year 16 to statewide back in the summer in August, and the chancellor had an opportunity to present to the president and his senior leadership team, the vice presidents, and a few board members were intended to kind of talk through what we were thinking in our budget request. We did ask for some new funding, but we were really pushing. We need to have some funding for the fixed cost increases. And we did then also highlight some areas where we are seeing some unusual cost increases, for instance, in the Title IX area and in services to students with disabilities. We asked for a couple new positions there, which in this environment may be challenging to get, and then also some additional program expansions. So that budget that the president has thought about has largely put forward all of the components of the UAF budget. There are a couple of items that he pulled out that he thinks would be appropriate for TVEP funding, and I apologize, I don't know what the acronym stands for, but it's another funding source that that we can do internal allocations to out of the system office. And so a couple of items will go through there, but basically everything else in the UAF proposal is intact and is going forward to the Board of Regents for their consideration the first week of November at their meeting. It'll be here in Fairbanks. I do think it would be, it's an opportunity, actually it's a great meeting for them to have in Fairbanks. It's an opportunity for folks to go and encourage the board to be forward thinking about where we want to be 5-10 years and just provide whatever input you would like to share. We do know that the budget is likely to be difficult this year. The state revenue picture does not look good. So we are planning for either a flat budget or a cut budget and have a number of activities underway. The chancellor in his convocation speech announced that he would like the planning and budget committee to reconvene early this year. They usually meet in the spring. He asked the provost to reconvene them again this fall and pick up where they left off just a few short months ago, thinking about where else we could go for some budget reductions. So they had their first meeting last week. In that meeting, the provost outlined her initial thoughts about how we would conduct a special program review of academic programs. We have in the past tried to preserve funding for academic programs. I believe it's going to be hard to do that this year. So outlined a process for taking a look at some of the smaller programs and is asking the Planning and Budget Committee to set some criteria and identify those academic programs that would be subject to program review in the next couple of months. In addition to that, the Planning and Budget Committee last spring identified several areas where they recommended some what they called special program reviews, areas where they didn't have enough time to dig into or just required more analysis than they had time for last spring. We are starting to kick those off. Last week, the chancellor kicked off a special program review of e-learning, one of summer sessions, and one of farms and large animals. And then I am still working with him to finalize the approach on 5 additional reviews, and those would be marketing and public information officers is one, KUAC, athletics, K-12 programming, and then one that the Planning and Budget Committee did not recommend, but the chancellor would like to kick off anyway, is another one on new revenue ideas. So we will be working on kicking those off. Okay, so those are all the grim news. Let me see. Moving on to more positive things. On Arctic issues, there is a lot going on, and I think I've probably mentioned it here before. The chancellor has mentioned it before. In March 2015, the United States takes over as chair of the Arctic Council. The Arctic Council is made up of the 8 Arctic nations. The U.S. will have a 2-year term as the Arctic Chair. Secretary John Kerry will be leading that group. And it's an opportunity really to have the folks in D.C. start thinking about Arctic issues. And they, you know, their attention is diverted to so many issues internationally. But they are really putting their attention on Arctic right now, and which has been a boon for UAF. We have been contacted numerous times by the State Department for thoughts about what should the chair's agenda be, how should we organize the agenda. I wanted to highlight this because we announced last week sort of a soft announcement, and today a more firm announcement. The State Department is kicking off a new Arctic Fulbrights program. We are very honored that Vice Chancellor Mike Sraga has been selected as one of the 2 people to lead that Fulbright program. It's the biggest Fulbright program ever, and it will be focused on Arctic issues. And we are hoping to have some UAF folks apply for those Fulbrights and then scholarships, and then we also hope to bring those scholars on campus, seeing as Mike is leading that effort. We have some pull there. Also, I wanted to announce that we have permission now from President Gamble to stand up a new center at UAF that will be called the Center for Arctic Policy Studies. We are excited because I think that will provide a way for us to really provide a front door to people who are interested in Arctic issues to come to UAF and know one place that they can go, and then that place will really coordinate all of the activities that other institutes and programs are doing and kind of be a convening. I would like to say, though, that we have no money to put into our Centric for Arctic Policy Study, so we will be doing this within existing resources using people's time who are already on staff, and again, Mike Sprague will be leading that. We do have, as part of our budget request in the legislature, an ask for some funding to hire a director and a part-time administrative support person for that. If we don't get that, we're still going to go forward. We'll just do it with the resources that we have. And lastly, I wanted to mention, probably saw in the Cornerstone, we are organizing the first annual Arctic Day for UAS. That will be Thursday, November 13th. We have a planning committee working on that, and I'd like to thank Juan for being the staff council representative to that. Ideally, we would have started planning this months ago. Unfortunately, we just started planning it a few weeks ago. So the first annual event will be maybe smaller in scope than a future year's events will be, but we will have a keynote speaker Wednesday, the 12th, which is Alice Rogoff, who is the publisher of the Alaska Dispatch, but has a very strong interest in Arctic issues. She has funded with her own funds the Arctic Imperative meeting and the Arctic Circle meeting in Iceland, and she will come and talk about why she thinks those issues are so important and why folks throughout Alaska should engage in thinking about those. The next day then, we are really focusing this event on trying to raise awareness throughout campus about what is already going on, so opportunities for folks to engage in research projects or activities, program activities, and then also what might be available for students to participate in. So we will have a poster and display session over in the Great Hall and then a student resource table there. And then that afternoon we will have a town hall event where Chancellor Rogers and folks like Vice Chancellor Sprague will talk about some of the key initiatives that we're working on. And people can either go and attend at the Murray Auditorium or can dial in that afternoon and listen to that over webcast. Okay, so I think a few sort of housekeeping things I wanted to mention. Going back to that Chancellor's Day discussion that Chris and Faye queued up, I do want to put a little more context around that. The Board of Regents has decided that the three campuses will have a common calendar. So we've kind of moved past the decision about whether that's a good idea or not. They've already decided that we will be have a shared calendar, that all three universities will have the same spring break. So we are now trying to figure out what that calendar will look like and when spring break will be. But as Faye mentioned, because we know that the school districts do not align their calendars, we know that it is likely that one or more campuses will have spring break at a time that does not line up with their school district's spring break. So the idea of having a Chancellor's Day was an idea that came from statewide to give each campus at least a day where they could have a floating holiday each year, where they could try to place a holiday where it might be most appreciated by staff and faculty. So that's the idea that's under consideration for Chancellor's Day, is do we want to move our spring break day to be a floating holiday that the chancellor can designate each year, possibly on a different date, to try to line that up with spring break. Another housekeeping thing that I wanted to mention is we still have under consideration at statewide the idea of possibly adding on two more paid days a year of what we're calling emergency leave that people could accrue, so that if we have a year like we had last year where we had several days of inclement weather and many people couldn't make it into work, they would not necessarily have to take sick leave or a leave without pay, that they would have a couple days each year that accrue for emergency leave. That has not yet been decided whether we're going to do that. I think they will be addressing that next week. So once they've made a decision about whether we're going to go ahead and do that, we will send out a reminder this year about UAF's inclement weather policy and expectations about folks coming into work or whether you can use sick leave or emergency leave. The last thing I just wanted to mention, I really like the idea of adding the staff achievements highlights to the agenda. I think it's really nice, as there's so many things going on, to take some time to recognize folks that are doing good work. I wanted to add to that, we had on campus, I think it was last week, it's kind of running together, the Federal Department of Education Office of Civil Rights doing a review of our compliance with federal Title IX laws. We won't probably know the results of that review, whether they have found problems with our program, for probably several months. But I did want to share that they were very happy with the materials that the Marketing and Communications Group put together to inform staff and inform students about the law, inform folks about the visit. And they were also very happy with the turnout that they had at UAF, that folks came out and they had really long sessions, focus group sessions with students and with faculty or staff and faculty talking about how that law is being applied on campus. So I just want to thank folks who were involved in that for really the strong effort in preparing for that unplanned visit. So I think that's it for this month.
Thank you, Kari.
Hi, can we ask a question?
Oh, sure.
I was just going to ask. So go ahead.
Hi, Kari, when do you, when you were talking about the aligned calendars, when, what fall would that probably start in?
That's a good question. I'm thinking next calendar year.
Yeah. It's,
so fall 2015?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's pretty fast. Yeah.
That is what Board of Regents has set as a goal, is to start it next academic year.
Okay, thank you.
Kari, I also have a question for you. If all three campuses are going to align their common calendar, are their teaching schedules also going to be realigned?
Yes. So, and that's been under discussion. I know that, for instance, UAF teaches 5 days a week. UAA teaches 4 days a week. UAA will be shifting to teaching 5 days a week. So there are efforts to align teaching calendars in that way. The idea is that the Board of Regents is interested in promoting is that students might be able to take classes in the same semester from multiple campuses. They are seeing a rise in interest in e-learning classes and just want to make that feasible. And it's very difficult if our calendar and teaching schedules are not aligned.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
I also have a question. On the calendars, has anyone at any level approached the school district to ask them if they would align to our calendars instead of the other way around?
You know, I don't know that we have, and I think that once we know what that is going to look like, that might be a good idea to do that, and just kind of because they have staff and students who will be affected by this.
I would think it might be a good idea to let them know this is going on if they don't already know.
Okay.
We haven't decided which calendar is going to become which calendar we're going to use, that they know that we're going to be doing this alignment and it's going to have that effect. So at least they're aware and not have to wait until we know when ours is going to be.
And I appreciate that. I'll take that back to the chancellor. I think one of the things that we've heard, and I don't know if this is true or not, is that the school districts actually purposely don't align their calendars with each other because so many people fly out of state and the airlines can't handle the volume, and so they purposely stagger. But I don't know if that's true or not, so we should talk with them about that.
Well, I think maybe the airlines might accommodate that.
Yeah, I know it would be in their interest, right?
I'll raise the price.
Yeah. Add more flights.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much, Kari. Okay. It'll be time for our guest speakers. I see Brad Laughlin here. Or I see either one. You can whoever wants to go first.
Good morning. Oh, Okay, so I was here to talk about the term funded policy. I don't believe the policy has actually been approved yet by the Chancellor's office.
It's in draft form at the moment, yeah.
Okay. So today it's going to be hard to kind of talk about that because it's really not been approved yet. But I guess I can talk about a few things, and I know that there is some rumblings about term-funded employment and how that employment is handled. And currently, you know, we're bound by our regulations, so I want to start out with that disclaimer, and that if we want to change regulation, that's not, unfortunately, that's not my department. That's going to be the system offices. So that means we need to do a resolution if we want to change regulation. We do have a lot of term-funded staff on campus. I believe there's about 890 term-funded staff. Don't quote me on that number. It may be off a little bit. About 50% are paid off grants, and about 50% are paid off Fund 1. Met with the leadership of the university, and we talked about that. And in reality, in our budgets, we're probably going to see more term-funded positions in the future just because of the uncertainty in our climate in our economic state. What we want to be able to do, and this is coming right from the Chancellor's mouth, as he told me, our goal is not to get rid of people. Our goal is to keep people employed. That's the number one goal here. And that's why the term funded policy was one way to do that, was to say, look, we understand you're on a contract from year to year. However, that contract's ending, but we want to help you because you're an asset to the university. You have university knowledge. And if you've worked at the university for a long time, that is very, very, there's no price tag on that. It's valuable. And our job in HR should be to help place those people or get those people new jobs. That's one of the goals with the term-funded policy, just to say we care. You don't have the same rights as a regular employee, meaning the layoff rights, but we do want you to be employed with the university and we want you to continue in some sort of capacity, and that's why we've tried to talk about professional development and things that people can do to widen their skills so that they're viable for new positions within the university. You're going to see this at any institution, at any company. With economic crises and things, we start shifting in what we're doing and where we're leading, and managers are going to start doing that across campus and saying, I need these resources allocated here due to X, Y, and Z. So it's a hot topic. It's something that there is some things that we could probably do to give term-funded employees some sort of security. But again, we have to realize that it's a cost to the university and that we have to keep those costs down, or we're going to have fewer employees if we have to offer more benefits to employees, if that makes any sense in the way I said that. We're still a business, even though we're a public institution, and we have to run this place as a business. So it's a tough one, but I think there's some things that maybe could be, proposed, and I'm not the one that's going to approve those, but I'll throw them out. And I know I've heard about this for a while, is the right to grieve a term-funded non-renewal. And if that's something that we want, then that's something I would support, because nothing is being done below board. We're doing everything above board, and so usually in institutions that are worried about that are when we're doing things that we shouldn't be doing. And I'm fully comfortable standing up here today and saying we're not doing anything shady with term-funded employment or employment at the university, and so if it's a process that people want to be able to grieve, so be it, because that's not my interest, is to make sure that everything is above board and that we're following our processes and our policies. So I'm not married to the idea. The other thing is to actually put into regulation notice period. Right now it says nothing about notice. So when I became the interim director the first time, this issue came up and people wanted to give somebody a notice on the June 28th, that June 30th was their last day. Under policy and reg, you can do that. Is that humanistically right? No. In my opinion, you should know well before June 28th that you need to not extend this person on June 30th. So what we created was a best practice that you're gonna receive at least 4 weeks' notice. And that has been a practice that's been in place. And I can tell you that even when we had a term-funded employee who was let go 2 weeks prior to the end of their contract, we paid them 4 weeks because we wanted to give them that notice. And that was a different situation, and that was an emergency situation. But those types of things don't happen every day, and usually people are planning for for the next fiscal year and know what their budget's going to look like. So that's another thing, is to add into the regulation a notice period for staff. That way we're bound to make sure that we follow those notice periods and it's in there for people to be, because if I leave today and a new director comes in, that may not be, they may want to say the regs say there's no notice period and that's the way we're doing business. So we may want to add that into regs so that we can tighten that up a little bit. And then once the policy is approved, I would like to revamp our non-renewal letters, because our work, and we knew about a non-renewal, the employee knew about this non-renewal 9 months before they were going to go. And so we started working with that employee right then, put them in a pool, in our layoff pool, and we started working with them 9 months prior to the expiration of their contract. So our goal is not to get rid of people, it's to try to get people back into the workplace, because these individuals are valuable to us. So once we know that something's going to happen, we're going to start working on it. We're not going to wait until a notice is issued, because that sometimes is too late. So once the policy is approved, then I would like to start working on some other things, but we need that to be solidified before we can move forward.
And
so get your feedback to Chris, people.
Please. That policy is currently with us. The chancellor has given it back to us in draft form and say, give me a feedback. What do you think? And there were some questions that we answered today that came out of last month's meeting. But at this point, I think those have been answered, and some of that encouraging to hear that you're ready to go to work on that if once it's approved. So.
And I really believe the chancellor when he says that, you know, putting people is his first goal, and it's loud and clear when he wants to create policies and work with people when we have economic hardships. It shows his leadership, so I just kind of want to throw that out there that I appreciate that. So, are there any questions, concerns?
I have a question, but not on that subject. It's on the Title IX and the what was the other one, the recent one, training that we had to have.
The
minors. How much closer are you this month than last month to having a consolidated place for this information to be going to? I've had the experience, and other people have an experience, where we have HR people over here telling us, we need a copy of your completion of this training. And again, I mean, this is not the first time. We've already supplied it before and twice, and they faxed it to somewhere, and they still don't have a record of it, and they need it again. And on this hand, I'm getting a congratulatory email from another department saying, oh, it's wonderful, congratulations for completing your training. Nobody knows, these other HR people don't know what they're doing, and they're coming at us over and over again.
And the HR is actually not tracking Title IX or minors on campus. It's risk management. And so part of the problem is this was forced, the OCR portion of this, the Title IX was forced on us very quickly, and people had to scramble because we have to be compliant, we have to have people trained. The training issue is an issue. And we met yesterday as part of the RFP for the recruitment system. We are looking at trying to see if we can get some sort of learning management system in there where we can track trainings and things like that. So it is on the radar. It is a problem. Risk management is struggling with how to track it and to make sure that it's foolproof. However, if you have HR people, and I don't know who these people are that you're talking about when you say HR people, do we have names or do we have titles or can we?
Sure, I'll just tell you that the Geophysical Institute HR office.
So you're talking about your HR PPAs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're asking you for evidence of that you've been trained.
Right.
And meanwhile, you're getting an email from risk management that says you have been trained.
Right, and I've already supplied it before, and I don't know who the HR is faxing the proof to, who that is going to. If risk management are the ones that already have that information, where is our HR faxing things to? Who else is asking for that information?
Okay, and I will follow up with Bob McCoy because he supervises your HR people.
Yeah.
And I don't know why people are asking for multiple things. Risk management is tracking it once you get it. If you're not on the list, so I get a list every month of the people that have not completed training, Title IX, minors, whatever the case may be. And so I go through and I ask my department people, have you done this? It comes from risk management. We have nothing to do with that portion of it. I get the same list that Bob gets,
right.
And I don't know why the HR folks are following up and asking
for
more
documentation. For some reason, they've been tasked with making sure we've done it, but because they're HR people, I guess, but whoever they're supplying the proof to, I don't know if it's risk management or who else is asking for this information that they're faxing information to. Somebody's not getting whatever they need.
So I'll also note, Jesse, on the getting training in one place piece, I think Brad touched on it last time, and I know Jessica has given an update as well on the training process improvement team. One of the first goals of that team is to have all the trainings, one website that you go to find all the trainings for UAS. And that website is in the process of being created now. They've got it, got edit access and are starting to compile things. And have also sent out a survey to everyone who offers training on campus, figuring out who tracks what, who delivers what, and they're in the information gathering phase. But that is it's a substantial project to get.
Well, maybe we need to invite someone from there involved with that to come give us
Jessica is actually the team leader for this project. So maybe at our next meeting you could give a status update. Is that all right?
I think and there's two issues here because I'm actually on the steering committee for the training, and I'm actually the one that was in the hallway with Pat Pitney when she told me that she wanted this. There's two parts to this. One is locating and gathering all the trainings into one area so that you don't have to go to multiple websites to figure out where you need to be trained. That's the first step, is gathering, trying to figure out, identify, and then put them all in one location. The second piece is going to be tracking that. That's the huge piece of it. I mean, we can gather until we're blue in the face, but if we're not tracking what we're gathering, then we have a problem. So that's the second phase of this team, is to say, how are we going to track this, and is it just going to be tracked within the unit, or is it going to be tracked so that employees have access to it as well, so that they can update their own training records, because you're probably doing things for your career that maybe aren't tracked by your supervisor, and so that's another component of this. So it's pretty big, but it also does go with our recruitment RFP, so there's all these pieces out there, but it is on the radar. It's a big initiative for Vice Chancellor Pat Pitney. She wants training out there, she wants it tracked, and she wants it accessible and value added.
And we have reached out as well. OIT has representatives on that team, all the administrative services do, and then we also have not formally on the team but as resources who are contributing, people in the research area as well, for the IRB training, for example, and required research training. So every department on campus, at least one person in that department should have received the first survey with instructions to share it with anyone in their department who does training, especially through the PPAs and financial managers. So that's just a quick update, but I don't want to cut into too much of Raj's time for.
Can I just ask one quick question? Are there any milestones or dates set for that task force?
The TED.
So we're hoping to have the initial website with that shows what we currently have for training and what you need, period, as a UAF employee. And then, in addition, if you're in a research area, here are the added-on pieces you need. If you're in HR, here are the added-on PPA training you need. Here, if you're in finance, the banner finance piece you need. At least having that website up with the basic content, the target is within this semester. And then within the next year, ideally, we will have a full kind of center model to implement that would allow you to take and track your training in one place for employees to log in and see what they need, what has expired, what's current, when and where it's due, and then to have a employee development, professional development piece on there as well. So you get the core you need as a UAF employee, the kind of follow-on that's specific to your job, and then if you want to grow into the next phase of your career, here are the trainings that apply to you. As Brad mentioned, the tracking piece has always been the most difficult, and right now we're tracking things in 8 million ways all over campus. But that's the initial target time for this team. And if this is, I mean, this is clearly something that's very important to employees, we might want to start having on our, maybe our ad hoc committee report, having Jessica do an update each month.
Yeah, okay. Let's add that in.
I have one quick question. This is Leslie Walls. Brad, is there more than one training requirement class or session for the minors, or is it just one?
It's two.
There's two trainings.
Can we get it's not very clear to the employees that there is a second one. A lot of them know about the first one, but very many know that there is a second requirement as well.
Yes, I will forward you the email I was sent because I thought I had completed the training and realized that I didn't go to the second one. And so I got an email that says this is how you do it, and so I will forward that. Can I forward it to you guys?
Yeah, Nicole, just UAF Staff Council.
I have a quick question. This is a different topic. But I haven't heard anything about it. Are there any soft closure days this year?
There will be probably soft closure dates. I haven't nailed those down yet, and the memo hasn't went out. I need to discuss that with Kari and the Chancellor and Pat. I just haven't had a chance to do that, and I know people are asking, so it's on my to-do list now.
Thank you.
Brad, I believe the last we had heard from the Chancellor on that was that it wouldn't be substantially different than past years, that the number of days and such would remain the same.
Right. But before I send out a memo and get hammered
yes.
by the campus, I want to make sure that everyone's on the same page.
Right. Yes.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Brad, either in the room or online? Hearing none. All right. Thank you very much, Brad, for coming back.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Now we've got a second guest speaker, Raj.
Do I need to speak into the mic?
Yes, please.
Yeah, we do.
For the online people.
So next up is Raj Kurapati. He's with Office of the Bursar, right?
He's the Associate Vice Chancellor.
Associate Vice Chancellor for Financial Services.
Good morning, everyone. Is this on? Okay. So I apologize for those that are online. I have a PowerPoint here that I'm going to be presenting along with Martin Klein, who is our Director of Auxiliary and Business Operations and Facilities. And Amanda Wall, who is our bursar, the director of the bursar office. And I apologize for those that can't actually see it online, but we have it posted on our website, and I'll provide that link at the end of the presentation. So for those that are interested can go and actually look at the PowerPoint as well. So this presentation was triggered by a need for us to take a hard look at the way we operated parking and shuttle operations on campus. Primarily driven by budgetary concerns, but also driven by our desire to enhance our services to students and staff, and look at ways where we can deliver services in a one-stop shop. Obviously, space is a highly valued commodity here and very limited. So we are not quite where we want to be as far as a one-stop shop for services, but we are making incremental adjustments towards our ultimate goal of having a comprehensive one-stop shop for our services. Parking is really comprised of two major operations that are combined into one. We presented this to Cabinet, also presented the same presentation to the Provost Council a couple of weeks ago, and we were asked to sort of clarify that parking is inclusive of shuttle operations, and to say just parking is probably a bit misleading. So really, parking revenues, this is FY14, this pie shows where the different sources of revenues that come into parking and shuttle operations come from. Obviously, the biggest being regular permits, parking permits, and also we also get some money off of the kiosks and the meters. But transportation fee that is applied to students also generates a little bit of revenue. So for FY14, we generated approximately $1.83 million in revenue for parking and shuttle operations. I do want to say that once again that Martin Klein and Amanda are here, so if I get stuck on anything, they'll be here to help me kind of get myself out of that that jam. So in FY14, we incurred total expenses of $1.94 million. So it doesn't take a genius to figure it out that parking was in a deficit last year. And again, if you look at this, you know, the biggest chunk of the cost related to parking and shuttle operations shuttle operations, which comprises of approximately 50% of the total operational cost. So in a nutshell, if you look at historical performance, you can tell that annually we've incurred deficits in parking, primarily because our revenue generation has always been much lower than our necessary cost to operate that particular unit. And as a result, you know, we are not allowed to carry large deficits in any unit. As a result, we've had to provide subsidies more or less on a regular basis to help reduce the overall deficit in parking. We had a couple of big subsidies that we provided in FY13 and 14 to basically reduce the overall deficit. We were already at about $500,000 at the end of 2012. We provided a $250,000 deficit subsidy in FY13 to reduce that overall deficit. And in spite of that, the net deficit actually grew by about $100,000. And then we did another subsidy of $250,000 in FY14. And in spite of that, you'll see that we still carried about a $200,000 deficit going into FY15. So obviously not a sustainable operation. About 3 years ago, little over 3 years ago, when I took this position, Pat and the Chancellor challenged me to look at ways that we could build more efficient operations. And one of them was to look at ways we could consolidate different units within administrative services, see if we could continue to deliver the services we're expected to deliver, but do it more efficiently. So some of the decisions we took as part of that was to look at the way we did the management piece or the administrative piece of parking. And again, talking, as I stated earlier, one of the goals was to create a one-stop shop for services to students and staff. So, as you know, prior to FY14, parking was actually the front office of parking was actually housed in facilities. Effective FY14, we actually moved that under the Office of Bursar and consolidated under the different operations that report up to Amanda and in the former business office. As a result of doing that, we were actually able to reduce overall staffing in the bursars and the parking area by 3 FTEs, resulting in overall savings of about $187,000 a year. We were able to reduce our footprint, our space footprint as well, and in addition to that, hopefully we improved our services because students and faculty don't have to go all the way down to facilities to get their parking permits. They can actually just go over to the bursar's office and do so. So we did start taking actions to try to reduce the overall effect of the net deficit that we were operating in annually in the parking area. But that is not enough. In latter part of FY14, FY15 officially, we also moved, let me get out of the way here, we also moved parking enforcement from our parking office over to the police because our CSOs, our community safety officers, are actually doing rounds. And we figured it makes sense instead of having another staff to actually issue parking tickets and enforce parking regulations, we could just move that over. And as a result of doing that, we actually saved an additional $15,000 approximately a year, a net cost savings. So we've taken these actions, but in spite of that, there are other areas that continue to rise, and those are inevitable because we have a lot of fixed costs that will continue to increase annually. Obviously, you'll see here, shuttle operations, which includes the personnel costs related to the actual shuttle drivers, has been growing every year. It's gone up quite a bit. In FY12, we're at $835,000. In FY14, we're up to $908,000, so approximately an $80,000 increase. The other costs as well, major cost buckets include, you know, the cost of clearing and maintaining the parking lots. That's done by facilities for us. That continues to rise as well. Well, not as dramatically as obviously the shuttle operations, but that continues to at least maintain or rise. And then the third largest category is the power it takes to, for us to heat the keep the head bolts working. We're obviously in a very cold environment, and as such, we need to have the head bolts working in order for our folks to be able to get to a car and actually get it to start, right? So you'll see that, you know, those costs continue to rise as well, and we'll continue to do that on an annual incremental basis. So in spite of taking those actions on the personnel side, we still see costs that continue to grow. At this rate, unless we take some additional actions, which is what the PPC asked us to do as well, the Planning and Budget Committee, they had several recommendations. Included in that was looking at the way we do parking and shuttle operations and see if we could reduce costs there. And their recommendation was to target an additional $200,000 in savings. So the Chancellor took that recommendation and challenged Scott Bell, myself, Martin, and Amanda to look at what we could do to further reduce the shuttle operations. So we took a look at that, and we said, okay, let's come up with some actions and some recommendations, and then that's partially why we're here today, because there's some recommendations that we would like to get your input on and your feedback so that we can fully consider the impacts before we actually take some of these actions. I'm kind of going quickly through this because I have a few more slides to go. I apologize. You can stop me at any time, or you can ask questions when I'm done. So one of the recommendations that we came up with was to eliminate TALKU service. We actually took that action. In our estimation, that should result in additional annual savings of about $105,000 a year. While we have taken that action, we are still evaluating the impact, and we are seeking your input and feedback on that. And there's actually a survey that I will refer to at the end of this presentation where you can go and actually provide your feedback on that action. Another action we're considering is to significantly reduce shuttle operations in the summer. You know, I'll go back one here. You'll see that TALKU is the lowest ridership among the different shuttle operations, which is why we took that action first, because we expected that to have the least impact or the least drop potentially. The next least shuttle ridership is in the summer. You'll see that it's 14,600 actual riders in the summer. So we're looking at significantly reducing that operation in the summer. We're not eliminating it, but we'll significantly reduce it. And there will also be a student electric bus that's actually purchased by the Office of Sustainability that will be running in summer to supplement the reduced service. So if we actually took that action, we expect to save about $40,000 in FY14 and an additional $40,000 in FY16 and beyond, partially because of the fact that we wouldn't fully implement that so until next summer. So we also implemented partially some of the actions recommended here, and that is to reduce off-campus shuttle service. Off-campus shuttle services goes to the Harper Building, Bowers, the Botanical Gardens, West Valley, and the University, 590 University Avenue, which is where GDC is housed. So we've actually significantly reduced that service, and we expect that we will continue to ramp that service down over time and only provide it where there are needs for students to get to classes, like, obviously U Park and other areas, and also for folks that need that service because there is a business case that's presented to us. So please look at some of these things that we're proposing, and if you have any thoughts on that, please let us know as well. And we expect that if we were to get to essentially what we're proposing here, ultimately will result in about $50,000 in savings annually. As I stated earlier, you know, in spite of us making these adjustments, the current model is not sustainable in the long run because our costs continue to rise. You know, every year we have, you know, board-approved incremental cost adjustments for our union employees and as well as staff, and we are obligated contractually to pay those obligations. In addition to that, as I stated, you know, our our fixed costs continue to rise as well. So eventually, if we purely looked at one side of the equation, eventually we'll be back at where we are, and we would be incurring large deficits again. So in order for us to have a sustainable financial model for parking services, we also are proposing some revenue enhancement ideas and actions. We have not taken any of these yet, but we are seeking your input and feedback on those before we make any decisions. What we will be doing is gathering up all the feedback that we get from staff, faculty, students, and other interested parties, and we will be making final recommendations to the Chancellor and his Cabinet on what actions we would like to employ. So we're actually recommending several revenue enhancement ideas. And again, you know, we don't have to implement all of them. We just, you know, obviously there's a stress that's on either side of the equation if we take some actions and don't take the others. So we can actually get where we need to by taking a couple of the revenue enhancement actions and also a couple of the expenditure reduction actions as well. So the first one is to increase the transportation fee. We have not increased the transportation fee since it was implemented, and this is actually I want to say 95. Since 95, we have not increased that fee, and really, what we're proposing here is a fairly minimal increase in the transportation fee. That's $2 a year for the next 3 years. That's actually paid by the students. Transportation fee is paid by the students. That's expected to result in about $28,000. In annual revenues over a course of 3 years when we fully implement the three incremental increases of $2 each. Parking permits, we're recommending also that we look at some sort of a multiplier of 3% annually for parking permits as well. Parking permits have also not been increased since 2005. So we're recommending that we look at increasing parking permit fees as well. And that's 3% for the next 3 years. So that's expected to generate about $100,000 more in revenue over the 2012, so not 2005. And then the third recommendation is to look at increasing the price of the meters. Right now, we are actually very, very low. We're recommending that we go from 50 cents an hour to 75 cents an hour, and from $3 a day to $5 a day. That actually is expected to generate about $100,000 a year as well in additional revenue. And lastly, you know, we're still sort of, you know, thinking through the idea of zone parking, and I'll show you a slide that shows what we're thinking there. And that is to kind of, you know, rethink the, you know, right now we have goal lots and we have non-goal lots, and then we have, that's it, right? So we're actually thinking maybe sort of rethink the zoning and allow for at least a three-tiered level of pricing for parking lots on campus. The next slide actually shows this, and I'll let Martin come here and talk to this because I'm about to have my voice give up on me, and I'm not as articulate on this as I'd like to be.
Can I ask a question before we change the speaker here? You know, as far as other ideas, I mean, you're open to other ideas as well, aren't you? So,
absolutely. I was wondering if I had to be up at that staff counselor or not.
Yeah, I was wondering about, I didn't hear anything about, yeah. You touched on the electric transportation, but how about other alternative fuels? Well, you know, natural gas is a big thing into Fairbanks, and a lot of these vehicles can also be retrofitted to run natural gas, which I think would provide a lot of savings, so especially for vehicles like that run all the time. So that would be something I haven't heard you say anything about. It. Maybe you've looked at it before. I don't know.
You know, I'll take the part of the question, and Martin can jump in. You know, yes, you know, the Chancellor has made it clear that, you know, he's very interested in looking at UAF being sustainable, you know, and looking at sustainable operations, which is partially why we've invested in that electric bus through the Office of Sustainability. The Office of Sustainability gets funding from UAF as well. The Chancellor matches every dollar that they generate up to a certain amount. So that also obviously, you know, helped get us electric bus, and that goes along the lines of, you know, continuing to look at sustainable alternatives to fossil fuels. And I think the idea of, you know, looking at natural gas is a great one. The question is, you know, what's the cost benefit? You know, we have to figure out how much it's going to cost versus what benefit it's going to provide, and if it's going to be really be in the long term a return. I suspect it is, but we have to do that as well. But we're open to those ideas.
So I've looked at natural gas from the shuttle operation standpoint, and there's a couple of things in the infrastructure that need to happen to make it work, and those may come into play with our new power plant. One is the supply. Another interesting one, though, about a natural gas is you need different infrastructure in your garages for storing your buses. If you think about it, in our current garages, we have fuel vapors that settle to the ground. And because of that, when we design our facilities, you can't have any ignition sources near the ground. Natural gas is the opposite. It rises. So if you have a natural gas bus, you can't put it in the same garage that you would keep a gas vehicle in. You need a separate bus for a garage for that. So those are some of the challenges. But when I look at, you know, the choice, here we are in Fairbanks, Alaska. Do we run an electric vehicle when it's 40 below, or do we run a natural gas? Yeah, I'd much rather run a natural gas, and I'd like to get there. I mean, that's certainly a good point.
Yeah,
and I think eventually we will get
reasons,
there.
For a couple reasons. I mean, batteries are difficult in the winter. And
they're going to be a challenge.
And natural gas also produces heat. So, I mean, then you don't have to worry as much about making heat for the riders. I mean, you got to provide heat as well. So,
yeah, that's a good point. Let me jump quickly to this zone parking. One way you can think of this is a question when I was much more actively involved in parking. Constant question is, well, how come there are no gold lots on West Ridge? This is kind of, it's like if you were to kind of implement that strategy, how would you do it? Well, one of the strategies is to say you'd put some gold lots on West Ridge, perhaps in East Arctic Health and Murray, and you'd take these three circled lots and you'd make those cheaper lots. So someone could park in those lots much cheaper. The middle lots would kind of stay in the middle, and we'd add more higher-priced lots in the zones. This is a discussion that on parking's website, they're asking for feedback on. And it is probably, of all the things we're proposing here, the most controversial, the thing we're getting the most comment back on. So we encourage you to look at that. But that's basically, in a nutshell, I guess the other thing to understand about this is complicated to implement. And it would not happen like this fall. I mean, this is probably a year or two out. Because if we do this, it's like, okay, well, then how does that person down here park up there? You got to get kind of, it's a devil in the details thing. But we are looking at options. It is a frequent comment that we hear is how come people in the core here who park next to their building have to pay so much for their parking, and people on West Ridge or down at the physical plant where I work can park next to their building and they don't pay a gold price. So that's what this zone parking thing in a nutshell is about. So,
thanks, Martin. Again, you know, we're looking for feedback. Like Martin said, this is something that we're not immediately looking at implementing, but we'd like to eventually consider doing. The Chancellor is very supportive of this idea, but we have a bit more thinking and strategy to actually implement this and be successful at it. So, all right. So in this one is just a very very rough example of what would happen. Essentially, we would have a three-tiered pricing. For zone parking, so zone one would obviously be more expensive because it would be closest proximity to the buildings, and zone two would be a little further out, and obviously zone three would be outer lots. So, again, this is just purely as an example. Nothing on this is actually any pricing that we've agreed that we would implement. So, so that's pretty much a summary of our parking presentation. We'd like to, again, request you to please go to the website, uafpark.edu/parking. And we have a page where you can provide your comments on the different ideas that we're proposing for both revenue enhancement and cost cutting. And if you have any other ideas, like the one that you just shared, Jesse, you know, we'd really appreciate your feedback. It's you know, we always tend to do better in thinking when we have several heads throwing ideas into the mix. So, any questions? I'll take some questions. I think I have a couple more minutes, maybe.
Yeah, you can have a couple more minutes. There's a couple in the room here, and then I'll ask for online as well. Richard, why don't you go first?
Is the charges and everything associated with the borough bus that's part of your
the parking group, the Marin Transportation Group?
No, that's actually paid through a central org. We pay it from our central. We have some central reserves that we pay for it, and because it has a broad institutional benefit. In addition to that, the Office of Sustainability is committed to cost going forward. Actually, that was supposed to start in 15, but they didn't quite have the resources, so we paid the 15 cost of that, which is about $100,000 a year out of central resources, and we expect that Office of Sustainability will pick up 50% of the tap going forward. At least that is the plan for now.
And then I was just wondering, the increase for the student contribution of $2 a year seems fairly minimal to me.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a reason why you chose that amount, and is there maybe possibly making that a larger contribution?
You know, actually, that recommendation has come up on a couple of occasions, you know, to reconsider what our proposed increase is. Nothing is set in stone. We can certainly do that. Obviously, we want to be sure that we consult with the students as well on their feelings about it. You know, the ridership is really, you know, is available not just to students but also to staff, faculty as well, and of course visitors on campus as well. So we'll take that into consideration. I think Stepping Stone, did you want to add to that?
I think the other the reality is the other political issue is, okay, when you start talking about raising costs of students to attend classes, that's something that you have to consider. So that's why our feeling is that the practicality is if we came forward with a large increase in the student transportation fee, we probably didn't think it would float at all. It would fly. So there's an argument that says this hasn't been raised in a long time, but practicality, we didn't think we could get there for
and,
much longer.
And we'll be presenting this presentation to the ASUAF as well, and inviting students and getting their feedback as well. So again, you know, we'll consider all options. You know, anything that's reasonable and implementable, we'll definitely do so.
Raj, I have a question for you. Are there any plans to rezone part of or a portion of the Butrovich parking lot?
Who's that, please? Or would you like to remain anonymous?
It's Jessica DeRocher.
Actually, that also came up. That's
that is a large parking lot with one building.
Yes, it is. So when we do this, you know, part of the zone parking would take that into account as well. That's probably the best way to answer that. You know, I think trying to get that to be a goal, which makes a lot of sense, would be a bit more of a lift for us. But I think if we went to the zone parking lot, that would certainly fall in the zone one parking pricing. Oh, that helps.
This one, Jane?
With the change of the shuttle stop from South Spinell.
We can't hear her.
I'm sorry. From the change of the shuttle stop from South Spinell to the Wood Center drop-off zone, which seems to be going pretty well for students, there's been talk about how that will change as the new engineering building facility opens up. Could you maybe just go over sort of what that will look like? Are you thinking two shuttles? Would that be one shuttle making three stops?
I could certainly take a stab at it, but I'll probably just lie, so I'll give it to Martin.
Okay.
jump back to the map. Let's go. So what she's talking about is once the road around engineering is opened, the plan is that there will be a shuttle stop closer to the new engineering building. And our plan then, and truthfully we don't know the answer yet, but in the master plan is that you kind of have shuttles that circle around the outside and then you start dropping people off there to get to that section. Keep in mind also, as soon as engineering opens up, you will be able to walk inside from Bunnell all the way through engineering over to Duckering, and essentially that whole section becomes one huge complex that you can walk into. And so our plan is to make the shuttle, we believe that people will be dropped on the outside of engineering much more frequently than they are now. Right now it's a real challenge to get to the engineering and Duckering building from the shuttle because you have to walk basically from Wood Center across. And that's our goal. There is also a plan circulating that has a roundabout right about where the shuttle stop used to be for Eielson. And I should point out the reason we made the change on the shuttle from the Eielson stop to the Wood Center South was not a funding-driven decision. It was because we had safety concerns with the buses. Actually, we had two accidents where buses coming down from Salcha Street headed down had stopped on that downhill height and somebody slid in behind them. And also the other big concern the drivers had was kind of snaking their way through Eielson South and all that pedestrian traffic. So that's why we moved it. That decision, that was a change we did this fall. That was not a funding decision. We did make funding decisions that Raj has talked about, the TAKU, and we're looking going forward. I guess the other thing I wanted to point out clearly that we want to get feedback from, when we say we're reducing summer shuttle schedule, the biggest change that will affect for staff, and we should be aware of that and we want feedback, is that there will be no summer shuttle service from Nenana to the core if we implement that. And at this point, we're planning on doing that. The only shuttle service in the summer will be an electric bus that would run from Wood Center, the north side of Wood Center, to West Ridge and back. So that is a change. We want your feedback on that if we go forward and implement that. And at this point, we're planning, and we need to make that decision really by the end of this calendar year to go forward on that. So these are choices, and we want your input. I'll stop there.
Thank you. Yeah, we kind of have to wrap it up due to time.
I have one quick question.
Okay. Last one. Thank you.
Thank you. Raj, I am glad to hear that you're considering zone parking. I am a Gold Spot holder down here at South Bunnell, and I've always felt it was unfair that we paid such a high rate and Restwich does not have to pay a high rate. But has there been any consideration of building a parking garage?
We let Anchorage take that one. So.
Yes, I know. they have another one coming.
Well, you know, it would be ideal to have one here, obviously, because we have greater weather challenges than Anchorage does. But given the current funding environment, getting funding for a parking garage, in our opinion, is probably not going to be something that's probably going to be achievable. But certainly, Martin can speak a little bit more to that. And there have been conversations about it, but in this funding environment, if we were to put forth a request like that, I think it would be very difficult to try to get that approved.
I mean, that is the answer, the short answer. A little longer, there was some funding proposed in a preliminary budget this year for a study of a parking garage to the south of Eielson for planning money. That money did not make it into the budget that went forward to the region. So it's continually bubbling there, but the truth is it's a tough sell versus other academic needs.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for your time. And again, we'd like your feedback. The PowerPoint will be up on the website that I shared. It's www.uaf.edu/parking/parking. And we'd appreciate your suggestions. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for your presentation today and your time here. So, I'd like to make a quick change to our agenda. I see Matthew in the room for governance report from ASUAF. And Debu, did I hear you come online as well? Or Cecile? No, okay. So be just Matthew. Okay, if we let Matthew talk before we take a short break, just in the interest of time. Yeah, okay. Come on up, Matthew.
Okay, thank you. So my name is Matthew Carrick. I'm a president of ASUAF, and recently we've been working very closely with Dining Services. I've had lots of meetings with Pam Zierfuss-Hubbard, with Glenn Teets, with Lindsay Oldenhoff, with Chris Racina. Last night we helped out with the Housing and Dining Forum in Dine 49, and we've reactivated the long-defunct but now active Food for Thought Committee that advises Dining Services on student needs and concerns. We've also been working on some internal revisions to solve some communication efficiency problems that we've been having. I think we're moving in a better direction to help service students and to help communicate student needs to administration, to staff, to faculty. And that's most of where our effort's been recently. Does anybody have any questions for ASUAF?
Hi there, this is Kim. Do you have any more detailed information on what you've been talking about with dining services? I am horrified at the quality of food over there at 949, so I'm wondering if that's come up at all.
Really, I'm surprised to hear you say that. Normally when I've been talking to students, I've been hearing that 949, the food quality has improved.
Really?
Could you talk to me about your concerns later, send me an email?
Certainly.
All right. Thank you. My email is mtcarrick@alaska.edu. We've been talking to Dine 49 about variety issues, about meal plan concerns. I know many students have been concerned about the new meal plan format, about fund management, and Dining Services has been very receptive to working with us. They've put out new spreadsheets on what your target balances should be for certain times. We've talked about food quality, service quality, and they're giving us the opportunity to provide input on the contract proposal that's being up. Myself and my vice president met with some representatives from Chartwell last week, which is a food contract company that's competing with NANA for the Dine 49 contract this year.
Matt?
Hi, this is Raj. Whoever it was that raised that question about concern about quality of food in Dine 49, would you send your email and your concerns over to Pam Zerfus Hubbard as well? Because we manage that contract through Dining Services, and we'll be happy to look into your concerns.
Okay, thanks.
I've got a few questions. You might have heard that we did a survey regarding banning smoking on campus. Is that something ASUAF is looking at? Has a recommendation or is supporting?
I have a spot on the Fresh Air Campus Challenge Committee, and we have a Senate representative to that as well as a student at large representative. The last student-wide survey that was conducted in the traditional ASF manner through election polling was last year, fall 2013, and we had not great turnout on that, and the question only asked about smoke-free. So we do have a survey up through Google Forms. It's like the one Staff Council has. I got the template from Mr. Crick, and we've had some response at least from the student government officials. And that is something that we've talked about at length at our student government meetings. And the opinion, it seems, of most people involved in student government seems to be against going smoker tobacco free, but when we canvass to students in the general population, it tends to be a little more friendly to smoke and tobacco banning. So I'm not quite sure where that disparity is coming, but that is something that we're talking about a lot, and that we are committed to making sure that we have a solid base of student support and that we know what it is that students want. Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, we can't hear anything that's being said there.
Okay, sorry, I was just letting Matthew know that we were taking it up today as well because the Chancellor needs to respond to the President on Friday in regards to UAF's plans for smoker tobacco-free.
Yeah.
Other question I have is, has ASUAF at all weighed in at the Common Calendar discussion regarding implementation of that, or
Or not yet. I'm hoping to have. I am going to bring that up to the Senate this Sunday, and hopefully they'll formalize a resolution. We did. I do have a survey out about that to the general students. It's run through Google Docs, and I sent that out over our listserv that has students in and out of student government last weekend. So I'll be reviewing that. And then we did discuss that at the Coalition of Student Leaders meeting at the retreat this fall. And there are definitely some mixed opinions. I tend to be of the opinion that it's a good thing. But there were a couple voices who were a little concerned about causing conflicts for students and just general disruption of schedules.
Cool. Thank you. Any further questions for Matthew, either in the room or online on the phone? Hearing none, okay. Thank you very much, Matthew.
Thank you, Wayne.
And I understand that Boo is not here today. So let's take a quick 5-minute break and come back and we'll resume. Thanks. All right, let's go back. We're a little behind schedule, but I think we can move through some of this a little faster. Okay, cool. We'll go to unfinished business at this point. Fall elections. Our nomination period ends this Friday. We've got how many? I think we've got like 7 or 8 nominations at this point that have been accepted. Can you, I don't know, Richard, can you talk more about that? Or?
I tried looking up this morning, but I forgot my phone, so I can't log in. You have two-factor authentication.
Yeah. I looked at that list earlier last week, I think, and I did talk with folks in Dillingham, where I was last week, and talked to two people who got nominated and accepted. So I was like, oh, good. we have 17 people that accepted nominations, so that is really good. Nicole put one in as a test when we were testing the system with Richard.
That was a test.
So that's awesome.
Mine was a test.
However, if you know of people that would be able and willing to serve on this body, please encourage them to do so. So by this Friday. Anything from elections on this? Further, Richard, do you, I don't know if you want anything.
Nope, except just let everyone know that the election software is ready to go as well. It's been pretty thoroughly tested.
Awesome.
So probably should let people know where it is.
All right, thanks.
Chris?
So the voting will be open for a month, starting November 3rd.
Cool. Was there a question on the phone?
Not in regards to elections. This is Leslie Walls. After we get through the voting, I have to step out at 11, but I need to run over something regarding the staff health care committee, and I was hoping I could bump my report up to that point.
Chris, this is Debu. I just joined in after my class. I just wanted to let you know that I'm
Okay. Leslie, is it okay if we do that after the unfinished business section? Would that work for you?
I have to leave in 10 minutes. I have a doctor's appointment that I have to be at 11 o'clock, and I promise it will only take me about 3 to 5 minutes.
Okay, then we'll wrap up the election part here, and have you go next. That's okay here.
I really appreciate that.
Richard didn't have anything. So voting opens on November 3rd. You'll see emails about that going around. And similar process, the nomination, the same software works in a very similar fashion for elections as it does for nominations. And that's really been revamped by Richard, and I think it's working great. Thank you so much for doing that. Okay, Leslie, I'll fit you in here.
I appreciate it, everybody. The Staff Health Care Committee met, and this is in regards to the 2015 proposed incentive design. The plan is that you must, again, participate in the personal health assessment and the biometric screening and earn 5 credits to be eligible for the rebate. There are various methods to receive those credits. One thing they try to concentrate on is a way for folks to achieve those 5 credits without having to use the healthy roads, but they're really trying to encourage you to. The 5 ways of getting a credit is to do an annual well visit, an immunization, a dental exam, a visit, a VSP vision exam, tobacco cessation, or not being a non-smoker. There are other ways of receiving credits through the Healthy Roads. I sent the breakdown to Nicole to have her disseminate it to the staff council, so you should be seeing that as soon as she has an opportunity to email it out to you. If anybody else has any questions, please let me know, and I will do my best to try to answer them. But they're going to roll this out as of November, but your health assessment and any of your exams will be retroed back to the 1st of July. Ta-da!
This is Kim. I have one quick question. I was scrambling to take notes. The 5 options to get credit are your annual exam, a vaccination, a dental exam, either smoking cessation or already be a non-smoker. What was the 5th one?
Visit or eye exam.
Eye exam, okay. And so everybody has to do all 5 of those as well as?
No, those are your options to receive a credit point, but there are also other options through the Healthy Roads, lifestyle coaching, e-coaching, doing physical activities. There's other ways to get credits, but they were trying to make it, because there's a lot of people that are kind of adverse to doing the online Healthy Roads or online phone coaching.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to give you the option of either or, a combination of.
So the people who have a problem with doing Healthy Roads, don't you think they might have a problem with having to turn in something that says, I mean, was it doctor's notes? We don't have to. I mean, how do you prove that you went to the doctor and got this exam?
I'm not sure exactly how it's going to be reported, but it'll probably be through give me a minute. They're not going to share the results that you went in and had a wellness exam, but through your history of the claim being paid that you had a history exam or a dental visit or a vision. I see, that part I do not know. It went over so quickly during the meeting that it wasn't fully. If you have any really strong questions, like I say the full information is going to be rolled out after the 1st of November, and they promise to blanket it hard and heavy so everybody knows what's going on.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for letting me step in. Everybody have a great day.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thanks. Okay, please nobody else leave before we vote. We're very close to the quorum threshold, so if we could just get the votes out before anyone else leaves, that would be great.
Or just don't tell anyone you're leaving, because that just triggers reevaluating quorum.
All right. So
this is why we keep Brad in the room.
Thanks for being here, Brad. Since I heard Dabu come online, I'm going to go to him next and then go back to our unfinished business. Dabu, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Actually, I have nothing to report today, unfortunately. I'm going to listen to what's going on with the discussion and we'll just comment if necessary at point, but at this point I don't have anything new.
Excellent. And I have one question for you.
Yeah.
It's a topic we'll be discussing next, actually. You may have heard that the system is, the UA system is considering a smoking ban on UAF campuses.
Right.
We did a, you might have heard that we did a survey.
Right.
I'm curious if Faculty Senate has done anything similar like that or has a stance on a smoking ban on campus.
Actually, that's a good question. We do have our administrative committee meeting this Friday, and I am going to bring that up as a discussion item in the meeting so that we can then think of something for the future. But this has been informally discussed by the Faculty Alliance and also or the members of the Faculty Alliance and some faculty senators. So nothing formal has taken a shape yet.
Okay. Okay, thanks, Debu.
Yeah.
Any questions for Debu?
Debu also needs to be informed that Friday has a sort of deadline on that.
That's right. Debu, the Chancellor has to have a response to the President by this Friday regarding UAF's plans for a smoke-free or tobacco-free campus.
Yes. And let me talk to Cecile about that and see. I do remember, I didn't remember the deadline. Thank you for bringing that up, okay? Let me talk to Cecile and see where we can, what we can do about it then.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be doing a resolution today.
Yes. I'm following it up, yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah, thanks.
Any others on the phone or in the room for Debu? All right. And we'll move to the smoke-free campus. You see the results from our survey. Thanks to Nicole for pulling this together last night after the survey finished.
Can we just say first, I just wanted to let the folks online know. Did this get sent out, Nicole, the survey results? Yeah, if you could do that just so they can see what we're talking about, that would be great.
So isn't the third question a contradiction? The tobacco-free ban, I thought, was going to be no tobacco on campus at all. And why are you asking, would you support a place to smoke if a ban is?
So the thought was that you can have a tobacco ban that is entirely covers the whole campus, or you can have a tobacco ban in most areas of campus with specific areas that would be more targeted than the current distance from the building and more enforced. And so the thought was there are people who will support a smoking ban if there are designated areas who will not support it if there are no designated areas. And so that was sort of a compromise option at the third piece that we were asked to consider.
Well, I don't think that's been communicated to the staff. Everybody assumes tobacco-free means dead stop across the board. No tobacco, no chewing, you know, no vapor cigarettes, the whole deal.
Yeah, and that's why we asked the first question, which is smoke-free, which is not completely tobacco-free, and the second question asks completely tobacco-free. And I think that the results in the survey show that there's definitely a difference there. Any questions on these results? And so for those on the phone that haven't seen this, the result for the first question, do you think UAF, including all UAF properties on and off main campus, should be smoke-free? Yes was 58%, no was 41%. The second question, do you think that UAF, including all UAF properties on and off campus, should be tobacco-free? Yes, 50%, and no, 50%, which actually a 2-vote difference. And the last question, if a smoke and or tobacco ban is put into place, do you think that designated areas for smoking and or tobacco use should be made available? The yes is 75%, no, 24%. Any other comments, questions on this?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
So do we have indications about what, I mean, what are we doing? Are we just passing this along to the chancellor, the results of the survey, or are we filtering the information or making a recommendation?
We have a resolution. As soon as we're done talking about the data, there's a resolution to consider that we would forward to the chancellor today if it passes.
And if the resolution would pass, then we would submit the data with comments as well as the resolution to the chancellor's office.
I should note, too, that in pre-staff, when we were discussing this with the chancellor, that we did state that should we support a smoking ban, especially one with designated areas, that we believe staff council would need to have a voice in the implementation planning of that, so that whatever it actually looks like in practice, we have a voice in as well.
Yeah, and for the I can't tell if this mic is on or off, actually, so if you can't hear me.
What's that?
Yeah. Okay. The Fresh Air Campus Challenge Committee, which I'm an alternate on, and now I hear myself echoing. That's weird. And Jessica Droschers is the main representative on. That group met last Friday, and part of its discussion was, well, what is our purpose going to be? It's co-chaired by Chris Racina and Brad Lobland, and one thought from the committee is that it may be a, if this is approved by the regents, how will we implement it? And so it may be that questions of implementation and how it happens will be things that can go through the FACC. We'll probably know more, you know, by the time it meets next. And the plan was to meet biweekly, every 2 weeks. So if you have comments, I think you can also send them to me or to Jessica, and we can take them to Fresh Air Campus Challenge.
Cool. Thanks, Brad. Other comments or questions on this issue?
This is Kim. I'm scrolling through the agenda trying to find, is there a copy of the resolution that we're voting on?
No, it's not. I'm about to read that. The reason for that was this survey closed last night at 5 p.m. I had the results a bit later than that, and I wrote this resolution, and this is a draft, okay? It can be amended or voted down or anything, late last night around 9 or 10 o'clock. And the reason I'm putting forward a resolution is to, I'd like to make a recommendation to the chancellor that he can consider before making his recommendation on Friday. As we heard today, ASUF really hasn't taken this up, and Faculty Senate and DeBoo just said they haven't really made any surveys like this or any resolution recommending or supporting anything to the chancellor. And so I'd like this body to do that. The chancellor certainly asked us to do that. Yeah.
Hey, Chris, I have a question.
Go ahead, Jessica.
It sounds like the Board of Regents doesn't really care what the three chancellors' input is. It sounds like this is a done deal. They're just ticked that they have to wait until December to implement it or to approve the policy on the Board of Regents level. It really doesn't sound like, you know, staff council, ASUAF, or the chancellor's input is really going to have much of an impact on their decision. Am I wrong on this?
No.
Where it might have some impact is whether it's a smoke-free or tobacco-free.
Right.
Or whether or not there are designated areas.
Okay.
It's certain that they will do something, I'd say. We're not likely to convince them not to do it,
right.
Although it doesn't seem like staff want us to convince them not to do anything. But I think we can have some input and some effectiveness as to what it actually specifically looks like.
Okay, well, that's good.
Yeah, and even if we have no effect and they don't really care what we think, it's good for us to be on record with
for
having
sure.
had some kind of opinion. Because after it gets implemented, then we'll have a lot of feedback coming from the staff and everybody else, all the other groups as well. And, I mean, it's not just, you know, students, faculty, and staff. We're talking about people that come onto campus, tourists even. You know, I mean, they have no say, but, you know, those are things that we're going to be hearing feedback from later, and at least we can stand and say we're on record as having had some kind of position or some kind of recommendation.
All right. I'd like to add for the Fresh Air Campus Challenge Committee, and I think that's in my notes too, but that's also something they were talking about. What are all the involved groups, including any outside groups, but also various groups on campus who may be more involved, like residence life, like facilities, like police, and so on. But to try and find basically, you know, someone, and Matthew mentioned a Senate representative and an at-large student representative last Friday. It was just Matthew from ASUAF for the students. So it sounds like they're expanding that too, which is good. And there was no one from faculty, and hopefully they will put an invite to the Faculty Senate. But anyway, they are thinking about that. They are thinking about, at least the FACC is, you know, what would this mean if we do it, and what are all the questions we have to ask as we're, you know, as we're considering it. And my hope is that that work would continue, you know, and that, or at least there would be some avenue for that work. It would not just be come January 1, this is the new rule. It would be a, you know, come January 1, we start a process.
Right.
So I have a question. So looking at the survey, if it does go through, it looks like it will be tobacco-free with designated smoking areas, just making an assumption.
So that's one thing. The way Chris wrote the resolution, we can easily change it before voting to either say we resolve that it should be a smoke-free campus with designated areas, or we resolve that it should be a tobacco-free campus with designated areas. And so with the second question there being literally 50-50, I think it comes to this body to decide which way we want to go. The first one, the respondents were pretty clear, smoke-free. Whether or not we expand that to be all of tobacco, we should probably take a vote right now and then do process.
Yeah,
but
I'm not sure. Go ahead.
I have another quick question. So who chooses these designated areas, and then how is this going to be enforced? And the reason I'm saying where I work, there's a sign right outside our building that says, do not smoke 50 feet in front of this building, and there's a person 2 feet away smoking right underneath that sign.
Me too.
So I know. Who's going to enforce this, and how is that going to be? I'm just
right,
curious.
And I think that's where the follow-on piece comes in. That's sort of the next step, that either the committee, the Fresh Air Campus Challenge that Brad's been discussing, would potentially have a say in how that goes forward. I do think that we did make it clear when we talked to the chancellor yesterday that we all agree that don't smoke within 50 feet of this building doesn't work, because I think all of us see people smoking in front of our buildings every day. So this is just an initial, should we even start to go there, and then implementation would be the next step and would have to have staff council representation involved.
Yeah, and so this would be changed to current policy, which is 50 feet from the building. And like you and many others have said, one, that doesn't work, and two, it's not enforced. If this becomes statewide policy from Board of Regents, which is where this is heading, there'll be regulations according to that policy with regards to implementation and enforcement.
So I think because we're at about 11 o'clock already and we do need to get this vote before people have to take off, we might want to.
Okay, let me read the resolution here.
Chris, may I have a point here? I was checking my note. This is Debu. Quick point. So basically, smoke-free, and this was a discussion with the chancellor, the smoke-free actually eliminates also smoke from vehicles, and is that what we are going to include in this discussion, or is just tobacco based smoke is the big question that the chancellor also was not clear on. I'm just kind of bringing it up because I was checking my notes on our discussion.
The staff council?
Yeah, this would be staff council.
staff council only. So, and we can forward this, if this resolution is passed, we can forward this to Faculty Senate.
That would be excellent. Thank you. Yeah.
So, let me read this. And at this point, it could be either smoking and or tobacco use. Resolution in support of banning smoking and tobacco use at UAF. Whereas the University of Alaska is considering banning smoking and tobacco use system-wide, and whereas smoking and tobacco use are legal and UAF students, faculty, and staff are adults who can make their own personal and informed decisions, and whereas allowing smoke and tobacco be used in designated areas away from building entrances and air intakes largely reduces the negative impact of non-smokers and non-tobacco users, and whereas the realistic impact that a ban would have on smokers and tobacco users needs to be addressed in a non-discriminatory manner. And whereas banning smoking and tobacco use would make UAF a nicer place with no cigarette butts, no spit bottles, and cleaner air. And whereas banning smoking and tobacco use might discourage some people from starting smoking and using these products or encouraging some people to quit using these products. And whereas a ban may lead to healthier people, reduce healthcare costs, and healthier lifestyles for those at UAF, now therefore be it resolved that UAF Council is in favor of banning smoking and tobacco use on UAF properties, be it further resolved that smoking and tobacco use be permitted in designated areas. I can strike tobacco use out of there if you feel that that is not what we want to recommend, and make any additions. Can I hear a motion for this resolution?
Second. I'll move.
Okay. It's moved and seconded. Anybody that wants to make changes to this discussion here?
Well, if there are no changes, then the resolution that we're voting on is smoke and tobacco free.
I agree. If you're going to make the smokers quit, then you got to make the smokers
quit. Make everybody suffer.
Okay.
Understood.
I noticed that there was no mention of the new vapor cigarette.
That's correct. Technically, that is tobacco, and therefore tobacco use.
Excuse me, I'm not necessarily saying we should revise it, but I guess I would just offer my opinion that based on what other people have said up to this point, that our experiences and our opinions about the current designated areas for smoking, I guess in my view, that should inform whether or not we choose to go there. You know, I understand, I take the point that what those regulations, the designated areas, look like in the future is probably not exactly what they look like now. But I guess it seems like the experiences that we've had with those designated areas so far those experiences are not irrelevant to what.
And that concerns me. Is there a cost then to patrol these areas and the designated areas, and is that going to cost more for staffing or people handing out tickets? I mean, what's the punishment? How much is that going to cost?
I think that's a good point. I think this is a policy change that Board of Regents is considering, and those are questions that would be resolved in regulations. But I'm open to having this motion amended to reflect that.
I think that's beyond the scope of this resolution. Yeah.
Other
comments? I would think that falls under that, you know, the devil is in the details, and that will be a problem to be addressed after, if it isn't instituted, then that's something that to be addressed then. Just like now, we have that experience with smokers now, it's not set in the policy like this one will be. So it'll be a total different animal, I think.
Unless we just amend the resolution to say to not include designated areas.
Correct. But since the resolution had the whereas, you know, I can't quote it exactly, but whereas, you know, staff and students and such are responsible adults and should have control over their own actions and should be responsible, you know, that would suggest to me that you're going to count on them to be able to abide by whatever regulations get put forth. So, and then enforcement is not, you know, our domain. That's somebody else's.
I would also say, just personally, I'd be very hesitant to not include the designated areas, given how overwhelming the response to the survey was in favor.
Exactly. That's what I was going by with our survey.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. I'll call for a vote. Okay. All in favor of this resolution, say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Nay.
Okay. Did I hear one or two on the phone?
Well, there was at least me on the phone as a nay.
Okay.
And I'm a nay.
Yeah. I saw one in the room, so... All right, motion or resolution passes. Thank you. All right, let's move forward. We're way over time here.
I agree with you too, but as far as the survey goes.
Let me, under item 10C, University of Alaska Core Values, I did not receive any feedback from you guys regarding that. I haven't so far. The system did provide their draft as well, which was sent out to everybody at the university. And so I'd encourage you to look at that and provide us with some feedback regarding that. Email to either me, Faye, or Nicole would be great to start that discussion. Okay, then let's move on to new business. Meeting schedule for next year, 2015.
I think we have a proposed change to the meeting schedule where we would meet on the first Monday of each month in the mornings. And part of that is that Faculty Senate meets in Monday afternoons, and so there would be a small savings to the governance budget of having the setup and breakdown occur once instead of twice for the meeting spaces, as well as some other known conflicts with the chancellor's schedule. The first Monday morning of every month is closer on his schedule. I don't know that we need to decide it today, but that's one proposal, and maybe we can have further discussion at our next meeting, but if you take that away and think on it.
Is that suggested for starting January 1st, in January?
So I guess that would be an important point to consider. Would we then have a January meeting, or would we not have a January meeting and then meet the first Monday in February?
First Monday in February is where I think that would start. So that's something to consider. Just a note, we did check with the chancellor to see if he's available to provide remarks at that time, and he is for next year, I think all the way till June. May or June, right?
I think also just another thing to consider about that, I think Labor Day always falls on the first Monday in September.
Okay. So.
I would also like to add, as an admin for our department, Mondays are horrifically busy for me, always.
Okay.
All right, we will come back with some other options at the next meeting.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Item B, proposed amendments to our bylaws. Those were attached to your packet. does membership and rules, who put these together, want to maybe address that, Jessica?
So, yes, we went over these at our last membership and rules committee, and they were just from last year's review of the bylaws that we have. And we have come up with the two motions. The one is to rename the administrative committee, and we want to call it the executive board because it more closely relays what the actual board does. And the second amendment is just to replace at-large representatives with at-large seats. So you can read those. They were attached to the packet there.
So just to be clear, these are just cleanup?
They are just cleanup completely.
So membership and rules is putting this motion forward. Okay. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay. We have to vote on these by roll call. So is there any discussion on these items? Okay. Hearing none, let's vote.
Sherry Rolfe. Leslie Walls. Jamie Warrick. Jessica DeRochers.
Agree.
Debbie Coxon. Jesse Atencio.
Agree.
Larry Murakami.
Agree.
Janine Smith.
Agree.
Jan Christensen.
Agree.
Jane Grossclose.
Agree.
Kim Eames. Juan Gula.
Agree.
Jeff Baxter.
Agree.
Trish Winters, Proxy Dean.
Agree.
Jessica McCallum. Susan Sanborn.
Agree.
Nat Ullman. Nate Bauer.
Agree.
Richard Machida.
All pass. Abstain or whatever.
Okay. Jorko Toivonen, Earl. Evelyn Pinsgaard. Lena Brown. Tom Langdon. Tony Abbey. Anyone whose name should have been called and wasn't? Only up 12.
So we don't have a quorum.
No, I do because Richard is abstained, so he counts towards the quorum.
So do we need 2/3?
Yes, so, but 2/3 of the 13, so we should be okay.
All right, motion passes. Thank you. Do we need to do the second one? Yep. So second motion. The second attached draft motion that membership and rules put forward. Do we hear a motion on the floor?
Pardon, Chris.
Yeah.
I might suggest, I don't have the agenda in front of me. If some of these items could be moved in the next meeting, that might be a good idea.
Yep. We'll move this one. We'll move this one to the next meeting then.
Okay. And we also just discussed the rest of the meeting was committee reports. Which those that have been provided are attached. So probably we can just read them on our own and do not need to go through them now since we're running so very late.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, is anybody here that wants to add anything to their report or that does not have a written report that wants to speak up about that? Jane?
The ad hoc committee for the common calendar didn't provide a report because there wasn't much to report. Further research has led to understanding that there is a task force
that is represented by Staff Alliance with three representatives of staff. And I move to actually dissolve this committee because I don't feel that it's necessary or needed.
Okay.
Are we able to do that today?
Yes, I think we are.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Those opposed? Okay, motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane, for your time on that.
I have a question on external UAF committee reports.
Go ahead.
On the Chancellor, is there anybody here for the Chancellor's Advisory Committee? No one present?
I don't think Debbie is here, no.
Yeah, and the reason I was asking because she's not going to continue as a staff council member. So what will happen to that committee? I don't know who else is on it, so if I don't know if anybody had also was on it at all except her.
I'm sorry, which committee was that?
With the Chancellor's Advisory Committee for the naming of campus facilities.
Oh, thank you.
If she's no longer on staff council, we would look for a new rep on that.
Yeah, well, I would volunteer to take that
okay.
spot. But that's why I was asking if there's anybody else on that committee here.
No, she's our only one.
Okay.
So I hear you're volunteering.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you,
thank
Jesse.
You. Thank you, Jesse. All right, let's move forward then to a short roundtable discussion. Can we stop recording?